the Initial Reaction Podcast with you once again without JP Kadoran of Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. He's on vacation in some ridiculously exotic, non-snowy, non-cold location. I hope his plane has all kinds of mechanical troubles. And I am still here, J.R. Radcliffe of Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers, with a guest host. Introduce yourself, my friend.
Well, I'm Andrew Grubin.
You're Andrew Grubin.
I am.
Also of Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers. But of many other things in the past, too. You know everything, right? Marquette, Bucks, Brewers. You're like a Milwaukee sports aficionado, right?
I like to think so. Some other people have told me otherwise, but
people have not told you otherwise. Who have told you otherwise? No one, right?
Twitter. The Twitterverse.
Twitter isn't a real person.
Okay.
Twitter is a hive mind that doesn't get a vote here. But Andrew Grubin works with us here, has worked with us here for about 6 months now, and yeah, this is a little awkward because usually when I'm talking to JP, it's over the phone, which works because of convenience, but it's also really nice that I don't have to look at his face. And here we are in the same room, and we're sitting across from each other, and it's just a little bit different. I don't know how you feel. If it's awkward, we could go in different rooms and talk over Skype if that works for you.
If that makes you more comfortable, because then you can think of JP as he's off into exotic land.
I don't think you've learned anything about the first 5 minutes of this podcast about how I feel about JP. JP is a good guy. He's extremely lazy and vacations all the time. Don't let him tell you otherwise.
It's the world of TV.
He is. He's a TV personality. Two big things I want to talk about on the podcast today. You're going to talk to me about some of our early impressions from the high school basketball season. We got a list of 10 things. 10 early observations from 2016, and we'll share with you those. And then also an interview with someone you know very well, Jed Kennedy, the Brookfield Central football coach. Great interview. I love this guy. Love talking to this guy because he gives you very good information. There's a lot of reasons I wanted to talk to him. I mean, first of all, our All-Suburban football team came out this week. There's a heavy Brookfield influence. Brookfield Central has some players. Brookfield East has our player of the year, Sam Santiago-Lloyd, and our coach of the year, Ben Farley. So I wanted to talk to him a little bit about Brookfield football in general, his team, East's team, and then a number of players in the NFL who Jed has worked with. I mean, Melvin Gordon and Trey Waynes, whom he has coached directly at Kenosha Bradford. Then there's Joe Schobert of Waukesha West. There's the old story that we tell all the time about the WIFCA All-Star Game, which basically helped Joe Schobert go from being a walk-on at North Dakota to a walk-on at University of Wisconsin and then eventually into the NFL. Great story there. So lots of good information from Jed. We'll talk about that at the end of the podcast. So, Andrew, you've been out watching basketball here for a while. You've seen a lot of action. We'll go back and forth. No particular order. Our 10 observations from the basketball season. I guess what's one of the first things that come to mind for you?
Well, I think if you look at teams that maybe have stood out above the rest in boys and girls are the Arrowhead girls. We knew how talented they were going to be coming into the year. But I think just what stood out from them so far is how many different ways they can beat teams, and because of their depth. I've seen them play twice, and I think against two pretty good teams. I saw them at Brookfield Central against Bayport, and I didn't know much about the Bayport girls, but I thought they looked to me like a pretty good team, and Arrowhead handled them pretty easily. Then I saw them play against Muskego, and Muskego's a much improved team this year, and that was a little different of a game where, Arrowhead got out to a big lead. Muskego pushed it back and made it a close game in the second half, but then Muskego foul trouble and an injury, so they were kind of playing the same five girls for an extended period of time. Meanwhile, Arrowhead's rolling 11 different girls out. They could have went even deeper in their bench if they had to. They changed lineups. They go from a big lineup to playing more of a small, guard-oriented lineup, change the pace, completely run Muskego out for 5 minutes. And that's the kind of the luxury they have, is they have talent. They can go so deep into their bench, they can play different styles, and they can wear teams out. And early on, it looks like I don't know if there's going to be a team in the Classic 8 that's going to be able to match that and take them down, because it Muskego played, I thought, really well in that game, and then ended up losing by 12. And I don't know if they could play much better than they did. Maybe just have more fresher legs without injury and foul trouble. But it's going to take a monumental effort for for Arrowhead to lose many games in the Classic Eight girls.
Certainly they have some standouts like Grace Gilmore, who's been there for 3 years as a varsity starter, Caitlin Harper, a junior, who's had a tremendous start to the season. I mean, they've got some frontline talent, but when we talk about depth in girls basketball, I really think most teams have seven players at most. Most teams are limited to two or three really standout players and then a couple girls who can kind of hold their own, especially on the girls' side of the ball. You know, boys basketball, you might have a little bit more depth, but with girls, you have a pretty tight rotation, or you get to some players who just don't have the experience. Arrowhead goes 11 deep, legitimate 11 kids. I mean, they've got kids in multiple classes. They got seniors, juniors, some sophomores. I mean, they are really, really loaded in terms of depth. And you're right, they're our number one team at Roundball Rankings. You can check that out at mycommunitynow.com/roundball. We have got our top five boys, top five girls teams. And Arrowhead is there at number one, and I don't know, are they gonna be there all year? I mean, McGuanago's good, Kettle Moraine's good in the conference, Waukesha West is nothing to sneeze at, but I have to think Arrowhead is gonna be very tough team.
It's gonna take a down night from Arrowhead and a good night from another Classic Eight team for them not to run the table
right in
the league. And that's hard to do. I mean, you never know what happens throughout the course of a season, injury, illness, you know, whatever. But they're going to be an overwhelming favorite in every conference game they play. And they've proven that they can beat top talent when they go out of league too. So, you know, they're the number one team in the state for a reason. And, I think, they got to be the favorites right now in Division I girls.
I'm going to throw a couple topics right off the bat here. First of all, staying in Classic Eight girls basketball, the McGuanago girls team, which I said is a squad that could contend with them. They're undefeated right now as we record this on Tuesday morning in a very good starting lineup of young kids. They got two sophomores, two freshmen in the starting lineup. The sophomores include Grace Beyer, who was a freshman on last year's state finalist team. Great point guard. She's going to be one of the best players in the area for the next 3 years. If you don't already know the name, you should learn it. And Natalie Anderson is a sophomore who came off the bench, was kind of the seventh man for the team last year. She has taken a huge step forward. And then a name you'll know, Angie Serra, who's the younger sister of Bree Serra, now at the University of Iowa, the all-time leading scorer in McGuanago, who graduated this past season. So the freshman sister is now on the team as well and starting for them. She's already getting some recruiting interest. She's not the only great freshman on the team. Drew Henning is another, but they're great freshmen all over the area. Lauren Schill at Pewaukee recently had a 28-point, 13-rebound effort in a win for the Pirates. I think that was over Greenfield. She's the younger sister of a senior on that team, Mackenzie Schill, who's one of the best players. I'll just throw out a few other names. I mean, Anna Mortag of Brookfield Central, you'll recognize that name as well. Brookfield Central has had many Mortags through the years. That's a freshman who's opening some eyes. Camille McNeil over at Shorewood, very exciting freshman guard. Natalie McNeil in Germantown, who had a huge game for Germantown as they defeated Homestead in a rally from 10 points down in the second half to beat a Homestead team in a big North Shore battle. Kate Bennis of Lake Country Lutheran has cleared 30 points this year. So there's a lot of really talented freshmen out there, and it's a great thing. We graduated a very good senior class of girls basketball players last year, and now we've got some great young players to fill in. And then I'll jump over to the boys side, kind of outside the area. Also, I guess sort of an issue impacting women's and men's sports in that outside the area, I believe it was Lake Holcomb and Prentice on the northern part of the state. You had actually for the first time in state history two female coaches coaching boys basketball facing off with each other. One coach has been there all year and the other was sort of an emergency replacement, or not emergency, but mid-season replacement when the coach sort of stepped down abruptly. And just a curiosity to be sure. But I like that because there has not even been a discussion about women coaching boys basketball or football. There's just a few sports that you don't see that. You have started to see that in other places. Boys volleyball is a good example where you see some female coaches from time to time. But there, to me, anecdotally, I feel like it is too overwhelming that on the girls' side of sports, you'll see a lot of male coaches, especially in basketball, and you don't get any trade to the boys' side. Not that you need a trade per se, but I feel like there are a lot of women out there who have the acumen to coach boys' basketball.
Definitely.
And I would like to at some point get to the – not that we necessarily need to see as many women as men, but that we could get to a place where we could say, yeah, they could do it, and let's keep an open mind. And there should definitely be more women coaches in boys' sports.
Yeah, and I think that – This is a good sign that it's starting. I thought when Becky Hammond kind of got integrated with the San Antonio Spurs and joined Greg Popovich's coaching staff and I believe she was their head coach for their summer league. their summer league entry. I thought that maybe would have start. It's going to be a slow.
Oh, definitely.
It's going to be a slow process, and it's going to take. I don't know if it's the right word, but it's going to take courage or somebody, an athletic director at a bigger school, in you know, maybe not just Wisconsin, but a bigger high school, a good sized high school to pull the trigger and to decide to go in that direction.
To start a program that has had success.
And there's no reason why. I mean, either you're qualified for the job or you're not.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of women that are basketball minds that could coach boys.
Yep.
On high school, college, and Becky Hammond proving she can do it in the pros. And I remember the Spurs came to Milwaukee right around when she started.
Yeah.
And Popovich was asked all these questions about it, and I loved his answers. He never referenced gender or anything like that. He just talked about her basketball knowledge and her coaching ability, and ultimately that's what it should come down to.
Yeah, it'll definitely take more than one catalyst. I mean,
Popovich is
a great leader for that sort of thing, to just be like...
Okay, I know Nancy Lieberman has done a lot of stuff as well, but it's still going to take more people to have to be willing to do it and take the chance on some qualified people.
Yep. All right, what's next on your list?
I think what's next on my list, strength of the Woodland West Conference in both the boys and girls. You're starting with the girls. There's a lot of some of the top teams, and not only in our area, but I think in the state, in that league. You know, New Berlin Eisenhower's coming off winning a championship. They've reloaded. New Berlin West is very strong this year. I believe they're 6-1, and you know, as of right now, Pius, you know, has a good team. Pius has a good team again, and then Pewaukee. Pewaukee is another talented girls team in that league. And then on the Woodland West, on the boys' side, there isn't a bad team.
No.
You know, Tosa West is unbeaten as of now. New Berlin Eisenhower has beaten some top teams and proven, you know, they're gonna be around. Greendale's 4-1. Pius is in the state rankings. And then New Berlin West is vastly improved. They've already won, you know, 3 games. They won 5 all last year, and they took Brown Deer down to the wire on Friday. They lost by 1 in the last few minutes, but they were up 7 late, and they're going to challenge some of those teams. And then Pewaukee, can't forget about them. They're very good on the boys' side too. So there's not one bad team in the Woodland West and the boys, and that's just going to be an absolute fight to the end. And on the girls' side too. So I just think the Woodland West on both the boys and girls. Just all around strong, and I wouldn't be surprised if conference champ in that league has maybe 2-3 losses.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Pewaukee has game, I know, against Greendale on Tuesday. That'll be a big one. And New Berlin Eisenhower on Friday. It's kind of like the classic 8 football, where every week is going to bring you some big time matchups when everyone's good. That's just going to
be. And a lot of these teams will then meet again in the playoffs because they're kind of in that Division II. A lot of them are in that Division II same bracket area.
And that includes Whitnall and a couple teams from the Woodland East that are pretty high quality. So that's you're right. That's about as good a conference as there is. Maybe it's the best in our area. It's the best in our area. It might be the best in the state for all we know. A little tough to gauge at this stage in the season. I'll jump over to the Greater Metro. Menominee Falls certainly was under the microscope a little bit in the offseason when Steve Showalter decided to leave he had been hired at Catholic Memorial, decided to leave that post to take the job at Falls when it came open. Kind of a funny domino effect. Falls was coached by Ben Farley, who then went over to Brookfield East football to bring it back to Brookfield East football, or Brookfield football in general. And that became open, and Steve Showalter elected to go over there. Falls 3-1 to start the year. They lost to a Watertown team that only has one loss in the early going. Is throwing up a lot of points in the majority of their games. Their one loss was a low scoring affair, but they are looking pretty good. And you know, Falls isn't going to be a superstar program right away. I mean, even Showalter at Germantown took him 9 years to win his first conference title, but. We know he's a very good coach. He's the architect of the longest winning streak in state history, and I'm really fascinated to see how Falls does. Falls has never lacked for talent.
Right.
It doesn't take... Obviously, J.P. Tokido came through Menominee Falls, and the McLeods were there for a while. I mean, they have some talented basketball players coming up through Falls. They always have. And so this is an interesting, you know, marriage between a really good coach and a community that I think will support its basketball, and I'm super intrigued to see where we're headed there.
And you can see last year kind of the makings of where they were going. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a They had a pretty good team last year that, you know, that competed with some of the top teams in the greater metro. And
definitely, yeah.
And they were kind of moving in the right direction. And I think Ben Farley had that program going in the right direction if he would have opted to stay coaching basketball over there. You're right. A good mix of a community that supports athletics, with a coach that's going to put in the time and effort to build a program, because he's done that
right
somewhere else, and a program that was in a pretty good spot for that when he took over. And I think that kind of can tie into, you know, my next point is kind of the parity of our leagues in yes. boys basketball.
Yes.
The Woodland West we already talked about, and then you kind of look at, there's no real favorites, you know, off the chart favorites. In some of the other leagues, the Classic Eight, you know, maybe Arrowhead is considered the favorite in the boys' side, but there's some other teams there that could push them. The Greater Metro, you know, Brookfield Central, Marquette, Menominee Falls could be a dark horse.
Yeah. Central kind of looks like in that race right now, but that's a close one for sure.
Even then you have a couple teams that'll be maybe not league title contenders, but teams that could have a say in it by upsetting some teams. In the middle half of the greater metro,
right,
and then you talk about some of the other, the North Shore. You get into that. You know, Germantown's not that, you know, going to run away with it. You know, Homestead's a very good team this year too. So I think parity in a lot of our boys conferences around here,
right,
is strong, and there's not that team at the top of every league that you say, oh, they should win barring, you know, injury or something like
right.
that.
Yeah, and I mean, Menominee Falls has already beaten Marquette, right, to bring that back, yeah, to the previous point, and then the Greater Metro. I definitely agree with you. When I'm trying to rank the top teams, it's much more difficult for me to rank the boys teams right now than the girls teams. To me, there is a subset of five or six really good girls teams. Mm-hmm. With the boys, I have a really hard time filling out a full 15,
yep,
because there's a lot of really good ones. I think right now I'm considering Whitnall our number one and Cedarburg, yep, our number two. It's sort of a 1A, 1B situation. Whitnall does have a loss to Destiny, a team that came in as a state title favorite in Division IV. And then Cedarburg is undefeated. Those are two of the best players in the state right there for one on each of those teams. Tyler Harrow, who's committed to Wisconsin, playing for Whitnall. He's a junior, as is Cedarburg's John Diener, who's committed to DePaul. That's one of the best matchups. January 28th, when those two teams meet, there are going to be a lot of people interested in the Luke Holman tournament over at Brookfield Central to see that matchup. It's a shame that those two are in different conferences. I'd love to see that rivalry play out more, because it may – I don't think in the playoffs they're meant to meet prior to the state tournament if it comes to that. But two really high-level players and probably as good as we have in the area – And just kind of, that's just all part of it. There is no one team right now that's really going to blow you away on the boys' side. And in a way, that's kind of fun. It's hard to know. And that comes back to some of my points, a couple teams that have been up there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really wide open across the board right now when you look at it. In Division I, Stevens Point just lost their first game. They had a 41-game winning streak. Goes to show how amazing that 69-game
yeah.
winning streak
yeah.
is. I mean, Point last 2 years, some of the best teams we've had in state history, with Sam Hauser and Trevor Anderson, and yet they're still more than a full season away from catching Germantown in consecutive victories. That's mind-blowing. But they did just lose their first game to Bayport. Their stud, Joey Hauser, the younger brother of Sam Hauser, he's a junior this year, had an ankle injury from the football season, has not played, and that's something that I know a lot of people are keeping an eye on. He's maybe the biggest prospect in the state.
I would say, yeah, probably.
Tyler Harrow has a case, but
yeah.
I would say Hauser is even as a junior in the same class, is probably number one.
Yeah, and Joey Hauser is just he's just a dominating high school player. I'd say, yeah, you're right. Him and Harrow, and maybe Diener kind of in that mix.
Yes. Yeah,
as well as high level Division One, Division One players. And yeah, Spash needs him to get healthy. I mean, we don't know
right.
the extent of that ankle injury and how long he's expected to be out,
right.
But from what they lost from last year in Anderson and Sam Hauser, if they don't have Joey Hauser on the court, that's three big pieces
right.
gone. It's hard to count a program like that out. But if Joey Hauser's ankle injury lingers into, say, if it's serious enough where it prevents him from playing down the road when we get into tournament time, then you're right. There's no there's no Spash at the top of
right.
at the Division One. They might still be a factor, but yeah, Joey Hauser needs to get healthy. Hopefully, he does get healthy just for the sake of high school basketball in this state, because fans should get to be able to watch a talent right. like that.
Yeah.
You know, play on a nightly basis. You know, he's a guy that both Marquette and Wisconsin are hot after.
Right.
And so yeah, hopefully gets healthy.
Playing together, that's quite the tandem.
That'd be too bad. You know, if a football injury, you know, prevented a guy like that from yep. playing. He's only a junior, so we'd see him next year. We don't know how long that
injury is going to be. Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's going to hold him out for the whole
so
year.
Hopefully he gets back soon and you know, one loss isn't going to be the end of the world for Spash, and they're still a loaded team that'll be in the mix.
And there's a couple teams from our area who have been powerhouses that are a little down. I mean, Dominican has won 5 consecutive state championships, unquestionably the gold standard for Division 3, 4, 5 basketball in the state. But there's a couple things working against them. First of all, they've started the year 1-3. They have some losses. Granted, they play a very good schedule, but they usually win with a very good schedule in the non-conference season. So that's a bit of a surprise. They've moved up to Division 3 this year in the postseason. They're going to have some higher-level programs than they have had to face in the past. So they do have, obviously, new head coach Jim Goss, one of the big storylines of the offseason, and they bring some talent back from that team last year. Jacoby Jones comes to mind, but they're not going to be right away that, and maybe by the end of the year, Jim Goss has them playing at a level where they're once again the gold standard in Division III, but might be the first year in a while Dominican isn't up there competing for a state championship, or at least being seen as a state championship contender.
And another one of those teams is Germantown. You know,
right, yes.
They're also 1-3. You know, I don't think they have bad losses. So, you know, triple overtime loss to Wisconsin Lutheran, you know, who's a very good team.
Yeah.
And then they also lost to Homestead, who's a very good team.
Right.
But we're not used to seeing Germantown 1-3.
I know. Well, especially in conference too. I mean, that Homestead loss was a close game, but you know, they've had everybody's number.
You know, and Steve Martin, the new coach there, again, is kind of faced with one of those challenges where the standards of the program that he inherited are just not fair.
Right.
Yeah. You know, kind of like, you know, Fritz Rauch over at Arrowhead. You know, they're kind of in that same boat where they're inheriting these programs where the expectations now are state championships.
That's true.
You know, and that's really unfair every year to, you know. So they're 1-3. I don't think anyone's counting Germantown out from this thing yet. But it's just strange to see. It's strange to see. Germantown's not the invincible force they have been. We've been used to them being the last handful of years.
I've dropped both Germantown and Dominican out of the top 15 for now. Keeping an eye on them, of course, they could easily work their way back in, but that's a weird sensation. Usually they're not out of the top 5, so it's going to be a unique year in boys basketball with some new blood, I suppose, coming to life. Again, check all that out at Roundball Rankings, mycommunitynow.com/roundball. One of the teams, the girls teams we had at the top of the year was Brookfield Central.
Yeah.
And they've fallen a little bit, but they have some serious extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, they've had some serious injuries. Before the year, they lost, a sophomore coming back that was expected to be a starter.
Yeah, Maddie Brower.
Maddie Brower to a torn ACL, I think in October, or somewhere around there, early season. I might have even been before the season where it happened. Then they had Jenny Cape, a player that was supposed to participate, be a factor for them. She has an illness that is preventing her from being on the team. And then a serious injury at their Thanksgiving tournament. Claire Haynes suffered a very serious back injury against Germantown, just kind of a freak thing of how she fell and how someone fell on her.
Yeah.
Serious back injury. She's probably not going to play the rest of the year. She isn't going to play the rest of the year. She's working her way back into going back to school just now from that. And she was, she was first team all conference player in the Greater Metro last year. One of their leaders outside of Caroline Bush, the other player they kind of went to. So they're kind of trying to find themselves without three serious, players that were going to play big roles and kind of just the overcoming the shock of some serious things happening to teammates too. And the concern level as a human being, kind of that stuff too. So yeah, they're trying to find a new ways to play. And, you know, Caroline Bush is a great player, and she's putting up points, but she's going to need some help. And Anna Mortag, we mentioned her as a freshman. She's kind of becoming that second scorer.
Right.
But they're going to need some other players. you know, they're trying to, you know, kind of find a new way to go about their business without Claire Hanes, and that might take a little bit of time. But as we've seen, there isn't much time when you get thrown into conference right away. You know, they had a tough loss to Tulsa East on Friday. Tulsa East is a kind of a surprising girls team so far. But then they get DSHA tonight, who, you know, DSHA is 1-4, but I think their talent maybe is better than 1-4. So that's kind of a big early season girls game for a team that need, both teams that need wins. So yeah, Brookfield Central girls just hit hard by injuries. And then they're going to have to recover to kind of, you know, find their way.
Yeah, the good news with Claire Hanes is it doesn't look like she'll need surgery or anything. Yep. She's able to visit teammates and stuff. And like you said, now back at school. So that was the good news. Let's stay at Brookfield Central. We're going to shift sports a little bit and talk to Jed Kennedy again. Said this at the outset. The football coach at Brookfield Central, his team won the Greater Metro this year. They won their first 8 games in a row. They lost in the season finale to Falls and kind of a surprise. And then lost to crosstown rival Brookfield East in level 3 of the playoffs. And East went on to win the state championship. You'll find some Central players on our all-suburban team. You should check that out at any of the Now sites. We'll say BrookfieldNow.com or WauwatosaNow.com. Lots of players from the area that have been selected. We released that on Tuesday morning. But love talking to Jed. A lot of thoughts about some players in the NFL. Melvin Gordon, one of the players we talked about this before Sunday when Melvin had not yet gotten injured for the Chargers. I'm unclear if we're going to see him anymore this season, so that's a bummer. But he was having a great year, so that's what I was speaking to Jed about, and you can give a listen.
My guest is Brookfield Central head football coach Jed Kennedy. His team had a hugely successful season in 2016 again. They won the Greater Metro Conference championship, went to level 3 of the football playoffs, and Jed, you got to level 3, you ran into to Brookfield East. I know that's probably still not something you're not a great topic of conversation yet, but when you guys saw Brookfield East go on to win the state championship, I'm sure there are a lot of kids on your team that know those kids and are friends with them and have grown up with them. Was that a happy situation, you think, for most of your team to see them go on and win the state title, or is it maybe a little more bitter than bittersweet to see that, you know, you guys could have been in that situation as well?
I'd say more bitter, to be honest with you. I think when you beat a team by 30 in the regular season, when you see them win a state title, it kind of shows you how close you were. Mm-hmm. I think the second part, it shows you how good San Santiago Lloyd was, too, you know, considering he wasn't overly involved in the first time around and, you know, it was the second time. I've been doing this a long time, and I don't know if I've ever seen one kid more single-handedly carry a team like he did. It was impressive to watch, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask about him. I mean, you've had a ton of experience with high-level football recruits. We'll talk about some of those guys. But with him, the mystery we've been discussing is how there aren't a lot of high programs after him, high elite, you know, Division I programs after him. It's not hard to figure out that it's because he doesn't physically fit the prototype of a Division I football player. When I hear college football programs chasing projects, physical projects who maybe don't have the football acumen yet, it makes sense that there'd be more of those guys getting recruited than guys who are really good football players who don't have the physical traits. Do you think, though, that colleges could stand to go after more guys like him who are great football players but maybe don't match up physically just yet, just sort of as a flyer? Or do you think there just aren't that many kids like Sam Santiago Lloyd out there who fit that bill?
You know, and this is just my own personal opinion. I think two things hurt Sam. This is just my own, like I said, opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't know this. You know, I think the one thing is, you know, what he does and what he's good at, people just don't do that stuff in college anymore. You know, I describe it as the old middle Mike linebacker that's 6'4", 230, cannot be overly fast. They don't recruit kids like that anymore. You know, they want, it's just, so I think, you know, the people who are lining up with two backs and a big tailback and handing it off, there's just not a lot of teams doing that stuff anymore. Everybody's 4 wide, 5 wide, throwing it every down, and I think obviously when you watch Sam, that's not who he is. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that pool of potential people recruiting him goes really, really small right off the bat. You know, I think that's the first part. You know, the second thing is, and this frustrates me as a head coach, is, you know, I think so many things are come down to measurables.
Right.
You know, and they, you know, is he fast enough? Is he this? Is he that? And I think that, you know, I think the one thing that people forget to remember is, you know, some people are just really, really good football players. And even though they might not run a 4.6, they play like they run a 4.6. And I think that's where he fits in there. And like I said, I don't know if I've ever been more excited. I've been doing this a long time. I've been fortunate to win a lot of games. I don't know if I've ever been more excited to see a kid graduate. I mean, he is tough. I mean, he's just, He's just, like I said, I don't know if I've ever seen one player single-handedly carry a team the way he did. And I saw a stat where he scored something like 20 out of the last 22 touchdowns or something. I mean, that's just unheard of. And I mean, I thought we had a great plan against him. And I explained it to people, I mean, we have a great running back who rushed for 1,800 yards. When we don't block people, he does a great job of getting back to the line of scrimmage. When Brookfield East doesn't block people, Sam Sunnyow gets 4 yards. I mean, we had people in the hole all night against him, and he doesn't have to break 20 or 30 yards. It's just, it's 2 yards, it's 3 yards, it's 1 yard, it's six, and he wears you down. And I tip my hat to those guys over there. They obviously found a recipe of getting him the ball a bunch. I mean, I think the play that I think signifies their playoff run was when it was 21-14 against Monona Grove, and they had a 4th and 2 at midfield, and East went for it.
44 yards.
And Monona Grove had 2 guys in the backfield on him. And, I mean, he made those guys look like little youth players. I mean, he stiff-armed the one kid, ran over the other kid, got the first down. They scored 2 plays later, tied it up, and got the momentum going. I mean, there was nobody blocked, and he got it. It's just the kid's good. So, I mean, I tip my hat to that kid, and he's going to play football somewhere, I hope, and whoever does is going to have a heck of a football player, I can promise you that.
So he graduates. Your running back, Zach Heckman, is coming back, and also Reggie Jennings, who is going to be on the short list as best defensive players in the state next year. I wanted to ask about when you get a kid who gets offered, he was offered by Wisconsin before his junior year. How tough does that make that? How tough is that for a kid? Because now not only does he have the spotlight of being a player who's going Division I, but I think there's an added emphasis because Wisconsin is the team that's looking at him right now, and I know he hasn't committed yet, but I mean, how much tougher does that make it for a high school player to have that burden or that spotlight on them?
I think it's, the thing that we talked with Reggie about was, there's times where people say he looked better as a sophomore. Well, he was not better as a sophomore. I mean, he got double teamed every play this year. Mm-hmm. Every play. And, so you don't see him making some of those great plays. Well, the reality is, some other people are making those great plays because Reggie's got 2 people on him. If Reggie's got 2 people on him, that means, someone's going to be unblocked. And, we sit down and talk to those kids and, just explain, kind of guide them to the process, how it, the stuff about committing and, if that makes it, and, if that's going to make it easier. And, Reggie's handled it well. I've had a lot of kids who've been in that same situation. Reggie's was just so unique. I had heard somewhere that he was the first kid offered in the state as a sophomore. He was offered, most kids are offered after their sophomore year, going into their junior. He was offered during the school year as a sophomore, which I think shows how good a player he is. And obviously we're excited we got 1 more year with him.
So when you were at Kenosha Bradford, you got another couple well-known football players at this point, Melvin Gordon, who went to Wisconsin, and Trey Waynes, who went to Michigan State. And I know they play different positions, but I feel like a little bit Trey flew under the radar because there was so much attention on Melvin, because he was a running back, because he ended up, he was going to Wisconsin. And nowadays, when a kid commits to go out of state, it's kind of a double-edged sword, but on the one hand, you're getting away from the spotlight of the Wisconsin attention from being, going to your home state football program. And on the other hand, you hear about it from people, from fan bases, maybe not even just the local one, all the fan bases that are disappointed you're not coming there. Did you see any of that in their recruiting processes? I mean, is that something that has your attention, the amount of fan backlash and social media backlash that kids hear about every time they make, whenever they make their college
decision? Yeah, I think that people forget these are 16-year-old, 17-year-old kids. I mean, we sometimes critique them and go after them like they're 25-year-old adults. I told someone the other day, and I told this to Trey, things couldn't have worked out better for him. I think, they were always, they were best friends in high school, and they were tied at the hip, and, Melvin, I think, Trey, the thing that's crazy with Trey is, he hurt his shoulder his junior year, he only played 6 games, he broke his leg the 3rd game of his senior year, he was kind of under the radar partially because he just didn't have, that.
Right.
Even a lot of snaps in high school, which is crazy to think about. His personality too. I mean, Trey's the kind of guy where, Melvin, he's going to be the life of a party before he ever gets to the party. Trey will be there for an hour and not even know he's there kind of guy. So their personalities kind of led into that too. And, I think Wisconsin recruited Melvin harder than they recruited Trey. And I think while Wisconsin was recruiting Melvin harder, Michigan State was on the full court press on Trey, and it just kind of worked out. And like I said, I think it, in the grand scheme of things, if you look back, it worked out really good for both of them, and I think it was great for Trey to go become his own guy, not, you know, Melvin's buddy, you know, Melvin's teammate that he probably would have continued to hear all the time if he was here at Wisconsin.
And both of those guys, it seems like, have taken a huge step forward in the second year of the NFL. I mean, hard to believe Melvin had zero touchdowns last year and has 10 this year. He's gonna clear 1,000 yards. And then Trey, you know, you would hear a little bit about him struggling last year. He had that game clinching interception against the Packers. You don't really hear anything about him at all anymore, which is probably a good thing for a defensive back. For those guys, do you think it was just simply one extra year of seasoning, or was there a switch that went on? Just the, you know, hey, a moment where they realized they belonged in the NFL?
No, I think that, you know, I'm, you know, fortunate to stay in contact with both of them, which I think is awesome. You know, I'm glad that, you know, as a high school coach, they still, you know, reach out to me and, you know, and those kind of things. I just think it's, you know, the thing they both talked about is just how different it is than college and, you know, how, I mean, just the adjustment. You know, I think, you know, a little bit with Melvin, I think Melvin seemed to be pressing too hard, you know, just my own opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, you seem to be really pressing to make it happen and rather than let it come to him. And I think with Trey, you know, Trey at Michigan State, they are physical corners there. You know, so I think being a physical corner going to the NFL where, you know, if you breathe on a guy the wrong way, they're going to call you for pass interference. I think, you know, it's just an adjustment. Both have had great years. I know, you know, it's certainly fun to watch them. I know for the whole, you know, I got a lot of friends still in Kenosha. You know, it's kind of a neat thing that a lot of people there have latched on to and, you know, become Viking fan and Charger fans because of those two guys.
Do you as a coach relish the opportunity to work with sort of the extra attention around these high-level players and colleges and recruiters and stuff, or is that a burden for you as a head coach? Because you've got a lot to do in addition to that.
You know, what's funny is, you know, I've been asked that probably 1,000.
Sure.
You know, it's one of those things, you don't get into this profession to coach kids like that.
Right.
You know, and the reality is you don't win games because of kids like that. What I mean by that is the reality is, the percentages are I'm never going to have a kid like Melvin Gordon and Trayne Waynes come through again. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, that are playing in the NFL. That's just the percentage of life in football. So I tell those people, when you get those kids, you enjoy them and you ride them like crazy. You know, for Melvin, it was carrying the ball, with Trey, it was being all over the field. So, you know, it's one of those, I guess anybody who complains about that pressure, they can gladly send them our way and I'll do it anytime. You know, cause with pressure comes great players and, you know, the reality is it's guys like that can make us look pretty good. And, I always tell people, this isn't rocket scientist coaching football. You know, we call it the man principle. You know, when you have the man, you get him the ball. When you have the man on defense, you make sure he covers their man. You know what I mean? People overthink this stuff and you really don't have to. And anytime you have a guy who's the man, you know, you just enjoy the heck out of it and hope the heck you get another one coming down the road somewhere.
So a lot of people know the story of Joe Schobert, who you didn't coach in high school per se, but the Waukesha West product who wasn't getting a lot of high D1 interest. He goes to the week of the WIFCA All-Star Game. You were one of the coaches on the coaching staff who ended up connecting him with Brett Bielema over at Wisconsin, and the rest is kind of history. You know, walked on, became a starter. So now he's on, playing on Sundays. So if you could kind of go back and tell that story a little bit, what was it in particular that caught your eye about Schobert that made you want to reach out and sort of connect him this way? And I guess, are there aspects to that story that are mistold or haven't been told? And I'm guessing you had this relationship with Brett Bielema because of Melvin Gordon's recruitment, right?
Yeah, and you know, we were fortunate. We had a kid, TJ Williams, back in 2007, and we had a walk-on. You know, I just had a lot of kids go through, you know, who – you know, worked with, you know, Wisconsin and worked with those guys. And I think that those guys, you know, I don't, if a kid's not good enough to play, I don't tell them they're good enough to play there. I mean, the coaches.
Sure.
So I think I, you know, gained some trust in those guys of, hey, if Jet said a kid's pretty good, he's probably pretty good. So I think that's kind of the backstory of it. But so we were in All-Star camp and, you know, and I saw Joe when we played against him as a junior. And so we knew he was really, really good. And we got in the camp. It didn't matter what we did. He was just the best player out there. And it was whether we were returning punts, whether he was on defense, whether we were on offense, whether we were doing individual drills, whether we put him out on stuff. I mean, it was just, I always tell people, other than Melvin Gordon, it's the most impressive thing I've ever seen. And to me, the aha moment was we ended practice one day with a little three-thing competition. We ran a 40-yard dash, we had a dunk contest on the goalpost, and then we could see who could throw the football the farthest. Well, he went out, we ran the 40, and he ran against Bakari Triggs of Riverside and Leo Musso of Wanakee,
right,
who were both high-level sprinters. Well, he won that. So, like, okay, he's fast enough. And then we went and did dunk contest on the goalpost, and he did like a between the leg 360, hung on the goalpost. I'm like, this is after practice in cleats, was unbelievable. And then he threw the football like 65 or 70 yards. You know, so throughout that week, and we had the scrimmage on a Thursday night, and Doug Steinberg came up to me and said, Jeff, you got to call Brett. You know, he said, so Brett, you know, he's one of, you're one of those guys that if you say, listen, you got to check this kid out. So I called Brett, and I said, Brett, I'm not telling you he's Melvin Gordon. I'm just going to tell you that for all the kids I've seen in Florida and Wisconsin, this kid just has it, and, you know, he's something special. And so I don't think I had a big part in it. I think I got, you know, maybe Coach Beal thinking, oh, geez, maybe we got to take a look at this kid. And they went up to the All-Star game. He dominated all over the place. So I think that got the ball rolling. I was kind of on North Dakota's bad list for a while. You know, you take that kid out of their program and help
yeah.
go to Wisconsin, but it is what it is. So right. He's a great kid. You know, I had a chance to say hi to him after a game when I was up watching Melvin a few years ago, and you know,
yeah.
still awesome, and certainly you know, need to watch him grow. And I mean, he's a heck of a player. I think, you know, he kind of goes back, if you'd ask me, to the San Santiago thing.
Yeah, exactly.
They said he wasn't fast enough. They said he wasn't quick enough. They said he, but you know what he was? He was a hell of a football player. And they can say what they want about Sam Santiago Lloyd. He's a hell of a football player. So,
no doubt.
I think sometimes, you know, as technology becomes and everyone's looking at all these measurables, you know, you still can't open the chest and check out the heart. So I think that's still the best one of all.
You never coached Joe Thomas, but obviously you coached at the school where he first made his name at Brookfield Central, and he's now closing in on 10,000 snaps without missing a play, and maybe he's never going to go to the playoffs if he's going to be with the Cleveland Browns his whole career, but unclear if that'll happen too. How does he kind of resonate? What does he mean to Brookfield Central? I mean, do you see his legacy sort of resonating there in the football program?
Yeah, I think anytime, you know, I mean, it seems to happen weekly during the season. Somebody retweets an article or, you know, where it's Brookfield Central grad Joe Thomas.
Right.
You know, I think any time every time that's said, that ties back to our kids sitting in our locker room. I mean, he sat in the same locker room that our kids had. He played basketball in the same gym that our kids play basketball in. He threw a shot in the same shot ring. And I think it kind of adds that, you know, hey, he was a kid just like us.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously Joe was blessed with a lot of things that a lot of us aren't. When it comes to physical ability out of a kid that size, but you know, certainly need to, you know, for the people of Brookfield to say, hey, I knew that kid.
And then, kind of as we wrap up here, you coached a year in Florida, and I was kind of curious how the prep football compares. I'm guessing obviously it's run a lot more like a college program in Florida and Texas and those states that are sort of high school hotbeds. They have a year-round weather advantage that we don't have in Wisconsin, but they also have just a ton more high-level recruits that are coming out of that state. Is that sort of just part of the fabric of high school football, that every school sort of has one or two D1 level kids? I mean, how sort of does it compare, would you say?
You know, I always tell people, I get asked that all the time. You know, I was down there for two different stints. You know, I always tell people that the first thing is the best players up here would be the best players down there. And I think that's, you know, but I think, you know, a couple things. Number one, there's a lot more players down there. Here they have this many Division I. I mean, they just have more schools than we have.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the pure number of high schools, I mean, I don't know what the number is, but it's, I mean, when I was in Orange County, we had 20, we had 19 high schools of over 2,500 kids. I mean,
yeah.
There's not one high school over 2,500 kids in the state,
right.
You know, so, and that was just Orange County. You know, I think the thing that helps there is they just get more football, you know, and I think that, you know, down there, you know, whether it's Texas, California, Georgia, Florida, you know, kids grow up being football kids, and I think up here our kids are better versed, if that makes sense. They're playing basketball, they're playing baseball, they're, you know, they're playing hockey, they're playing football, so those types of things. You know, but I mean, the big thing is, you know, I always tell people, just look at time alone. You know, down there, they will have 4 weeks in the spring and a game at the end. So if you take that alone, a high school kid in Florida is going to have 12 more weeks of football in the spring than these kids will have.
Right.
Well, up here, that's a season. So where our kids are playing four seasons, they're playing five seasons. Then you talk about it, you know, they play 10 games, they have a bye week and an extra week of practice at the beginning. Well, you start adding that together, these kids are getting, you know, 18, 19, 20 more weeks of football and developing as a player. And you start, I mean, it's just, you can't
That's
put a price tag on playing the game. You know, and I mean, you know, when it comes down to things like, you know, our football kids all lifted in a class, You know, here we run stuff after school. So it's down there, if you have a kid who's a basketball player and a football kid, he's going to lift every day, whether he's in football or basketball, because he has it as a class in school.
Right.
You know, and up here, you know, things like that are just pretty uncommon.
All right, Jed, well, I really appreciate your help. I know Brookfield Central's not going anywhere and going to be pretty good again next year, so hopefully we will touch base again sometime next season.
Yeah, it was funny. You know, we were just talking at our banquet Sunday night, and you know, we sat here at the same time last year figuring out how the heck we're going to replace 17 starters that we lost.
Yeah.
You know, and now we sit, you know, so I think, you know, we kind of sit back and forget. This year is a little bit of a surprise for us, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now we sit here with the fact that we returned 17 starters. So certainly a different feel for us, but I think we have the table's definitely set here to have a really good season next year.
All right, Jed, I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, thanks to Jed Kennedy for chatting with me. Andrew Grumman, thank you for sitting in as this week's J.P. Kadoran. You are much better looking than the original. Don't let him tell you otherwise.
Yeah, those are some small shoes to fill.
Love it.
I didn't have
love
much
it.
To live up to. So,
anything else we have going on at, that the people should know about at LakeCountryNow.com or MyCommunityNow.com?
No, like you mentioned, all suburban football this week, kind of the big rollout, the centerpiece, and just a lot of basketball still left to be played. Like kind of like we talked about, a lot of big storylines, a lot of good games that should be coming down the road. And again, just a lot of basketball left to be played. But there's also some other intriguing teams in our area and other sports. We got a lot of good wrestling teams in our area, and hockey season's also in full swing. So it's winter sports is going.
We have full coverage of that again at LakeCountryNow.com, MyCommunityNow.com. Find your community. We'll have stuff for you all throughout the winter sports season. And maybe we'll even have J.P. Kadoran back on the podcast next week. We'll see. He's going to have to
Depends what he brings you from his vacation.
That is a good point. I didn't think of that. So when J.P. is listening in, I don't know, wherever he is.
Iowa City.
Mexico. Iowa City. Yeah, that is his second favorite destination behind any place warm, Iowa City. Strange man, that J.P. Kadoran. But he will be back next week. Thanks to Andrew Grumman for sitting in with me, and we will check you out next week. Thanks for listening to Initial Reaction.